Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show.
Where can a local business leader plug in with other business leaders to learn, connect, and be a champion for the local community they work and live in? Today, we're going to explore that answer with our guest, Brett Schangenbach, the president and CEO of the Carlsbad Chamber of Commerce. Brett, welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD.
Jeff, thanks for having me. I appreciate the invitation and looking forward to it.
Carlsbad Chamber has more than 1,000 member businesses employing 65,000 or more individuals. It is the second largest chamber in San Diego County and the 10th largest in California. It's truly an influential force for the region's business community. Brett, I must admit, I've never belonged to a chamber. I've attended one or two events over the years, so I'm excited to explore the chamber and how that fits into the whole overall landscape of our businesses here.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to discuss it, and we're going to convert you and make you a true believer by the end.
All right, that's what I love, and hopefully all our listeners.
Right on, exactly.
All right, well, let's jump in. So for folks that aren't familiar, maybe talk a little bit about the chamber. What's the role?
Sure. In our industry, we have a saying that says, if you've seen one chamber, you've seen one chamber. And there's some truth to that because each chamber does mirror the needs of its individual community that it's, you know, based in and supports. However, there are some, you know, commonalities in the industry, of course. And, you know, most people, if they have knowledge of a chamber, they think of it as, stereotypically at least, they think of it as a place where people go and have a happy hour and exchange business cards and, you know, and that's fine.
Cocktails and networking.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we do that. That's not an untruth. However, there's so much more to what a chamber is about and what a chamber does. And I'll just use this example. If you think back, say, 25 years ago, and you think of what was everybody's perception of economic development, air quotes, back then. And really, back then, economic development was, how do we get the next, and you can kind of fill in the blank there, Qualcomm or Viasat or, you know, whatever the example is, or 10 years ago, how do we get that next headquarters for Amazon to come to our community? And that was the sum total of economic development. And there's some value there, right? If that company, whatever it is, comes, then good jobs come to your community. And that has a trickle-down effect of positivity. But
so I remember that back many years ago, I was working for Toshiba, and they wanted to build a big factory here, and that was going to be my project.
Yeah.
When I rolled into town, the economic development guys were all, yeah, this is the town. Yeah, I had a good job.
They were courting you, right?
They were courting me, yes. I was the pretty girl in town.
Exactly. And, you know, and there's validity to that, but what we know, what we've known for quite a while, and then COVID just accelerated, was that talented people can go wherever they want. They're not bound by where a job's located or a company is based. And all of us who are listening to this or that you talk to, if they thought about it for more than 5 minutes, could probably name a dozen people that they know that have said, oh, I'm moving to such and such place. And you go, oh, did you get a new job? Oh, no, I'm keeping my job, but I'm relocating over there, right? Because they can do that. And so then economic development, when you start to think about it, really becomes, well, how do we attract talented people to come to our communities, not just companies? Because the people come and they start companies or they expand, you know, their enterprises. And so when we think about, well, what does it take to attract talented people? You get into a lot of the quality of life metrics, you know, great schools, low crime rates. I'd like to say affordable housing, but that's
not only, us.
Yeah, it's not, that's a bit of a misnomer in Southern California, but, you know, great amenities and et cetera, et cetera. So as a chamber, we see ourselves as playing a key role in all of those aspects of life, not just businesses that get together and exchange cards. Again, not knocking that because that is a valid thing and has a great place, but we're involved in all forms of community development to make a community a great place, including, you know, creating a business-friendly community, right? So that's kind of a really high-level view of a role that chambers serve. We interface with the business community, but also schools, public safety, government, and the nonprofits, and they kind of come together through us, and we try to make a positive impact on all of them with what we do.
I love that, because that's really kind of the genesis of this program, is the idea of businesses influencing something beyond just making money, right? Having
Absolutely.
A positive influence in our community. So you guys are bringing people together to actually change the community that you're in.
Absolutely, 100%.
Give us a story.
Ooh, a story. I'll tell one about this idea about talented people and attracting them and how that can make an impact. And this gentleman was on my board of directors for a little while. He originally, when this story starts at least, was working for Yahoo. And he got recruited by Walmart. And this is going back a little bit here. I want to say about 12 years ago, maybe. He got recruited by Walmart because at the time, Walmart was going to needed to beef up its online commerce platform because, of course, the Amazon reality. And so they tabbed him. They stole him from Yahoo and said, we want you to start this whole thing back end and beef up our online platform. And they said to him, we want you to come up to, he was working for Yahoo in Carlsbad. We want you to come up to Silicon Valley, and this is where we're going to start this initiative. And he said, why? And they said, well, that's where the talented people are. And he said, he convinced them, if I could find 8 people to launch this initiative here in Carlsbad, would you support the office being based there? And they said, okay. So he did. And then over the course of a number of years, it grew to 150 people right there in Carlsbad. And it went all the way through until when the pandemic hit and they all scattered and went remote. And they actually never came back to an office experience after that because they're like, we could do this remotely. But here you see like the example of one person who loved his quality of life in Carlsbad. And instead of saying, nah, I'll go relocate. No, this is where I want to be. And he built around him and made this beautiful, you know, company that supported lots of people.
I love that. That's a great story.
Yeah. If you drove up and down the 5 freeway up until a couple of years ago, you saw their sign right off the 5.
This was back in the day, like when I was growing, my dad worked for General Motors. So every time my dad got promoted, guess what? we got moved. People go, what, did your dad work for the military? I go, no, he worked for General Motors.
Felt like it though to you, right?
Yeah, really. Exactly.
Starting a new school, meet new friends.
What about social impact? I mean, you guys look to do some programs. You talked about schools and that.
Yeah, great question. We're very involved in, I'm going to use the word workforce development, but I'm going to use it in a very broad sense. You know, one of the things we hear from our members is attracting the right talent is a challenge for business. Now, right now, there's a little bit of a excess of talented people because there's been a lot of tech layoffs nationwide, right? We even see it with Qualcomm and Viasat and others locally, but nationwide, you throw in Amazon and Twitter and Microsoft. There's been a lot of reductions. So there's a lot of talented people currently. But again, speaking broadly, that's been a big challenge of companies over the last decade. It will be again soon. So when we look at this as a chamber, I mean, yes, I already mentioned we want to attract talented people, but we also want to grow talented people and retain talented people who are here. We have a couple of initiatives that we've done in this arena going all the way down to the high school level. One program we have, it's called SoCal, which of course is an acronym, Student Opportunities for Career Awareness and Learning, SoCal. And what SoCal was, it started, I'll go back about 10 years. In my previous chamber role, we used to do these field trips where we'd bring 8th graders out to real companies and give them these really cool in-depth experiences, not just, oh, here's where we make this and here's where we ship it, but they would meet people. When we'd meet them, they would get to hear who this person is, what they did, what they liked about it, what was challenging about it, how'd they get to this point in their career, and if they were like adding somebody to their team, what qualities do they look for? They would meet, you know, we'd go into a company, like there's a company up there called Solitube that makes a tubular daylighting systems. And so they met a couple people in different like shop floors, and then they met people in research and development and marketing. And so they got kind of this mix. There's some, I don't know if it's still PC to say this, but some blue collar, some white collar, you know, type of things all in one company. And the idea was most kids at that age know what mom does and dad does.
Maybe.
Maybe. And then like at most after that, hero jobs like teacher, police, fire, right. military.
Based on what you see on TV, right? Yeah. Not even the real job.
Exactly.
Just your assumption of what the job is.
Exactly. And that's about it. And so our idea was if we could take them into these experiences, we could just broaden their perspective a tiny bit to open up their eyes to what exists and how it might connect to their interests, their talents, and what they were doing at school. And we found when we were doing this that we had some success. We actually, in our pilot program, we surveyed the kids before they went in and then surveyed after. And for instance, one of the comments that just stuck with me, one of the kids said, I never thought that I could use my love and interest in art in a profession, like a job. Like she never connected those dots. And after this, she's like had this aha moment. And that was the idea. That was a great program, but field trips are difficult for the schools to organize these days. And I found myself as the chamber guy, I was hitting up the same 5-6 companies constantly to host another group of eighth graders. And fast forward post-pandemic when virtual learning all of a sudden was okay and being online was acceptable, the SoCal program was a collaboration with the Carlsbad Oceanside Vista Chambers of Commerce, Tri-City Medical Center, and the San Diego North Economic Development Council. And we created an online portal, SoCalWorkforce.org, where students can go and do the same kind of exploration, but of course, online. And it's benefits, it's evergreen, they can do it right in their classroom. And so
So these are taped videos that you could-
These are 3-minute high quality videos nice. That are shot on location, kind of like a mini snapshot of a day in the life, if you will. And it's the same concept, who you are, what you do, what you like about it, what's hard about it. How'd you get to this point in your career? If you were adding somebody, what do you look for? And we have over 100 of these videos already, and they're all right there in North County. So we developed it in collaboration with the school districts because we wanted it to be something that was meaningful and impactful that they could see themselves using. And the feedback we've gotten from the schools has been very positive because it's not like if they wanted to pull a YouTube video into a classroom that says, what's it like to be an engineer? That exists. I mean, you're going to get some dude in Boston or somebody in London or whatever, but ours, what they said, what they love about it is it's so hyper local. These kids might have driven by this company. Right. They might have their next door neighbor.
It's real. Yeah.
Yeah. Works there. Or they know somebody from church who works for that company. And so we made it very tangible and we're expanding that portal. We've now got the Encinitas, San Marcos, Escondido chambers involved. And so we've grown the footprint of the program and we continue to expand it. And I've actually been in classrooms as they were utilizing it in career exploration, you know, for these kids where they could go. And on the portal, what's cool is you go to a career, let's say like you're interested. There's one of my favorites is a talent recruiter at Solitude is on there. You can watch your video, of course, but then it tells you what's the career outlook for that job in our county. What does that person who does a job like that make on average as a salary? And if the job is something that you would need a certificate or a degree, here's some resources that you could investigate to possibly pursue that. So it's a really cool portal.
Real practical education,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I love that.
And so, you know, connecting that with our business community to our education community and helping, you know, connect some of those dots. So that's a great program that we're continuing to grow it out and beef it up. And we continue to tweak the user interface experience, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one. Yeah, another one, you know, a lot of places, including us, we have a cool scholarship program, but we have a scholarship program that doesn't focus on athletics or academics. We focus on overcomers. Who's overcome some kind of challenge? And the challenges, believe me, I've been in it for 10 years with this program. They come from such a wide variety, and I'll share a story or two, but who's overcome some kind of challenge and either got their education back on track or somehow kept it on track and is persevering through it? And let me explain what it does. Once a month, we have a breakfast. And the schools, every high school in Carlsbad brings a kid each month, a senior. These are just for high school seniors. So we'll have 4 to 6, depending. And then at the end of the school year, those kids who have been honored throughout the year, and only those kids are eligible to apply for a scholarship. And then, so we gave out $15,000 in scholarships last month. And very exciting. But the stories are fantastic. I mean, we've had kids who have had to flee their country of origin for political asylum reasons. We've had kids who have been homeless, kids who have overcome, you know, childhood cancer, kids who have had parents incarcerated. And I mean, just the unbelievable diversity of things these kids have done, but somehow they've overcome. And these breakfasts, part of our pitch is one of the selfish reasons the chamber does this is we want these talented kids to, yeah, they're going to go on and get a degree or probably do this or that, but come back to our community. We call it our Rising Star program, and they are rising stars. We want them to shine back in North County, back in Carlsbad, you know, back in this community in San Diego, and because they're making impacts already and we value them, and so we love on them.
Wow. Those are a couple of great stories. I love that. It was kind of interesting. I was actually talking to someone yesterday that's going to be a future guest on the show, and they're investors in early stage companies, and their whole focus is to invest on the entrepreneur, the leader. And their focus is about people that have a mission or passion that's kind of based on overcoming something.
Love it.
And kind of a whole different kind of view instead of going to get the high flyer from Yale or whatever. It's like, no, right. We're looking for people who have actually done something. So you guys are doing something similar there, right?
I love that. Yeah.
Enrolling people who got grit.
Yeah. I'm going to be listening to that episode. I can't wait. Yeah.
Kind of funny, too. You gave me a little flashback. I remember when I was in high school, and I don't know who sponsored it, but had a chance for me and a few other people. We went to, in our local town, there was this big company that made big, huge cables, electrical cables. So same kind of idea. I remember to this day, I remember going in there, meeting with the engineers. We went in the lab and they had these big, huge cables. And they said, well, here's how you splice a cable, but you have to test it. And then they run like 50,000 volts of the thing and it blow up. I ended up with an engineering degree, Brett. I don't know if that was a seed or what.
It very well might have been.
Like, right? You need to blow things up, I'm in.
It's so great, though, when, you know, kids at that stage in life get a chance to taste a little bit of the real world. And I come from a family of educators, so when I say this, it's in charity. Truth is, the majority of educators, not all, but the majority go straight to college to be a teacher and go straight from college to teaching. So they actually haven't really worked in a, you know, a real business, and yet they're training the next generation of workers. And so we try to help bridge that gap a little.
Well, just getting that exposure again, I think too often we just have this idea of what we think jobs are.
Yes.
I mean, I'll even say that part of the reason I went to engineering school is I rebuilt a car when I was 15 with my dad. And I really enjoyed that, but I also said, man, this would be like really repetitive. So I thought engineering would be like that, except more fun or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
then I went to engineering school. Well, what the hell is this? This is terrible. This is nothing like what I expected.
That's hilarious.
Should have thought back to my guys at the cable company. So what's it look like to be a member? What's it take to get in? And
sure.
As a member, what's expected of me? And
yeah, great question. Chambers of Commerce are nonprofits, not charitable nonprofits. Like, I think the IRS has 23 different designations of nonprofits, and most of people are familiar with 501c3s, which are tax write-offs. We're a 501c6, so a membership nonprofit, but at our core, we're a nonprofit, and so our revenue to support us, we don't get city funding. Some chambers do, but in the most part, we don't get any money from our city, our county, anything like that. We are sustained by our membership dues, so members pay to be part of us. We have advertising revenue options for people if they want to advertise. And then we have events. And those three things are what sustain us. And so, yeah, a member could decide to join. And then there would be, depending, there's a couple of factors we look at, like what level of interaction and benefit do they want? How big is their company? And then we say, okay, here's your price. I think our base entry level is about $450 a year-ish. I think maybe it's $470 now. Thanks to inflation. But be that as it may, there's nothing actually expected of our members. And that's important to know. Every person who comes to join a chamber has a different reason, what they're looking for. And we work hard to what's in it for you, what do you see, and then try to match that up for them. For some members, that's going to be a level of engagement, like they're going to come to one of our networking things, they're going to join a committee of ours, something like that. For others, it's not. They just want to be a member, which is then we're going to refer them. We get phone calls, emails, walk-ins every day, people looking for referrals to, you know, different businesses. And whether these members of ours have a chance to network or not, we're going to be referring them. And then our website, you know, as we all know, people do business 24/7, nonstop. So our website gets a ton of traffic, people looking up, researching companies. We get thousands of hits a month on our website in the top two places. Every time, I've been in this 16 years, every time we've ever studied it, the top two places they go is our membership directory and our events calendar. despite all the cool whiz-bang things we put on our website, that's where they go, is our event calendar and our membership directory. When you're a member, you're going to be listed there and seen. Nothing's expected. You don't have to attend a darn thing. And we're still going to be working in the background for you, whether you attend something or not. We like when they attend because we get to know them better. And the better we get
obviously,
to know
them. Yeah. Easier to refer, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The better we know them, the better we can match them up with what they're looking to do. But no, nothing's required. And, you know, we were just chatting earlier today. We have some kind of like an electrical parts company that's been a member for like 30 years. I don't think they've attended a single thing ever. We go out to see them, just say thank you and bring them some donuts and like, what can we do for you? They appreciate what we do in the community. And so they pay their dues every year. And that's, right. You know, and we love them. I mean, we appreciate them for supporting us in that way. So there's nothing required, but we do have lots of opportunities depending on what people are looking for. You know, and I joke about how people stereotypically think of a chamber as just a place to network, but a lot of people do come to a chamber for networking. And at our particular chamber, we do it quite well. And I tell people, if they're a morning person, we got morning options. If they're a lunch person, we got noon options. And if they're an afternoon person, we got happy hours. So we got
that covered, right?
We got that covered.
Can't use that as an excuse.
Exactly.
We got something for everybody.
If that's what they're looking for, we got it. So, and to be honest, we have a lot of fun with what we do. Just a side note, one of my staff members like 2 weeks ago said, you know, it's summer. We should do an ice cream social. And we're like, what? It's like, we should just do an ice cream social just for fun. I'm like, that's a good idea. 2 weeks later, we're down in the village in Carlsbad at Handel's. 30 people came and we just having fun.
I love Handel's. That's some good ice cream there.
It's very good ice cream.
So I was looking on your website and I'm a facilitator. That's what I do for a living. And I noticed your board. You have like a lot of people on your board.
I do.
How do you manage that? How do you keep that together? What's the secret?
Sure. That is a big board. And board management is an art form. It's not a science. So there's two parts I'll say to that. Having a big board is valuable because we have a large membership. You mentioned at the top of the show, we have 1,000 members. And so we want to have a large, diverse board that reflects our membership. So there's people on our board that are home-based, you know, mortgage lenders, all the way up to big manufacturers and Viasat and kind of everything in between. And that's important to us so that leadership is reflective of our makeup of our chamber.
Well, sounds like a democracy or something.
But the reality is the biggest heavy lifting is done by my executive board, which is 9 members.
Okay, so you got a core team.
It's a subset of the larger board. Because as you're pointing out, it is difficult to do a lot of high-level stuff with that volume of folks.
If everybody has a chance to speak, you would be there for a couple of days, right?
Yeah, and we do once a year do like a retreat where we'll go and take the day and look at how was our year? What do we strategically want to do next year? And we try to have all of our board members there for all that input. But month to month, the heaviest lifting is done by my executive committee, which is great. And they're great leaders. I appreciate them so much.
So how'd you get into this? How'd you get roped in? What happened to your childhood? What tour did you take, Brett, that made you become this guy?
It's such a good question. Almost nobody goes to college thinking, I'm going to go work for a chamber, because nobody even knows what a chamber is when they're in college, whether they go to business school or something else, which I didn't go to business school, so got a degree in psychology.
Well, it's probably more important.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's become very useful, I have to say, as you know from all your discussions, leadership is all about people.
End of the day.
Yeah. So the psychology angle actually has been very practical, but I went into technology first. I was in sales and marketing for a software company, a little startup up in the raging metropolis of Bonsall. Yeah, I know. That's where everybody thinks when they think of startups for technology. But I was with them for like 7 years. It was a human resources management software company. And I don't know, we had like 25, maybe 30 employees at peak. And I learned a lot. It was a great experience. And I decided to go branch off, go on my own. And I went into residential real estate. If you know people in real estate, maybe you've heard this term that people think they're going to try real estate out, but real estate tries them out. And I was one of those people that found out I hated it. After I did it for 8 years, but it was real estate that got me engaged in my local chamber at that time. So
that was your tour.
Yeah, it was. And it became a conduit, basically. And I joined a committee, got invited to be on the board of directors at that chamber in Vista. And in 2008, the gentleman who was running the chamber, he and his wife decided to move back to the Midwest where they were from. And I was not enjoying real estate in 2008.
Oh, yeah, there's a good time.
Yeah. Oh, it was brutal. I decided to throw my hat in the ring. And so I ended up switching from being a volunteer board member to being a paid staff member and fell in love, just enjoyed it. I fell in love with the role the chamber can have in the community and just the type of things that we could help impact and can improve and can be engaged in. So I kind of became addicted. And like in any job, there's moments when you're like, why am I doing this? But every time I would think about making a switch, I couldn't leave the industry. I just really enjoyed it. And I was just kind of hooked. I was fortunate when this position came open in Carlsbad, which about 6 years ago right now, when it first became open, and I'd been in Vista at that point almost 10 years. So Carlsbad is, you know, was double the membership, double the budget and staff. And so I was very fortunate and blessed that they chose me. And I love working in Carlsbad. The business community is diverse and it's dynamic, and it's kind of the economic engine for all of North County with all the different industry we have there. So I love it.
Is 100% of the members from Carlsbad, or is that not really a criteria?
No, that is not a criteria, and that's a great question. And you'll find this in most chambers, but for us, we have about 30% of our members are from outside of Carlsbad, and a portion of those are really big companies that maybe have membership in multiple chambers. Another portion of those are companies who specifically want to do business in Carlsbad, and they see us as a way to do that, which we love and we embrace. All you listeners, if you want to do business in Carlsbad, we're open for you. Just go to carlsbad.org and reach out to us.
The more engaged you are, the more likely you get referred.
That's right.
Show up and be there. Yeah. Come play the game. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I do love the community. And a couple of factoids that people might not know about Carlsbad. We have over 15 million square feet industrial space. And so the diversity of, we got high tech, we have biotech, we have, you know, government contracting, we're the golf mecca, you know.
Right, golf's big there, yeah.
Yeah. The computer gaming software industry's got a big foothold in there. I mean, so there's all these different pockets, but coupled with that, with the fact that we generate the second highest revenue in tourism dollars in this county, only San Diego generates more than we do.
Oh, wow.
And with...
Didn't know that.
Yeah. Thank you, Legoland. I mean, since...
and the flowers.
Yeah. Since Legoland opened in 99, we've exploded with hotels and, you know, it's fantastic. That combination, though, of having good, solid industry and also tourism, it's a beautiful mixture.
Do you engage much in politics there in regards to local laws and rules or lobbying for certain things? Is that part of the job as well?
Absolutely. And it's kind of fun. It's one of the fun parts of the job.
Is it really?
It is. I enjoy getting in there. One of the things I enjoy about being in the chamber is we're always kind of on that cutting edge of what's coming up. And sometimes that's, you know, battling bad legislation that's bad for small business or whatever. But sometimes it's just, this developer is coming and is proposing to wipe out this project that exists that's old and antiquated and economically dead. And here's what they're proposing to bring. And so it's kind of fun being engaged at that level of community development. Sometimes that leads to, you know, maybe the community isn't excited about that redevelopment infill, and we're going there saying, no, look, this actually makes sense.
Is the value, yeah.
Yeah, and that's real, and that is what it is. But there's other times our city was considering possibly raising the TOT, the tax rate that they would do on tourists when they come to stay at a hotel in Carlsbad. And we and other entities in town felt that that would put our hotels at a competitive disadvantage to our neighbors. And not just our neighbors in San Diego County down here, but if you look at our neighbors immediately, you know, Oceanside's doing a great job of redeveloping their downtown. You know, Encinitas just put up a beautiful hotel right on the border of Carlsbad. So it wasn't just put us at a competitive disadvantage with some of the places people think of in San Diego, but right in North County. And so we went and advocated for our hotel members who were like, not in favor of this, and the city decided not to do it. And so, you know, yeah, we get engaged at those kinds of things. And
you got to save that bullet for when you want to put a football stadium in.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly right. But then we're also get engaged with Sandag,
That's got to be an interesting conversation.
My goodness, you know, lots of your listeners are probably well-versed in Sandag's dabbling in vehicle miles traveled tax, you know, 12 or 18 months ago. And so we were trying to rally people to speak at their meetings to oppose that. And, you know, so, yeah, we get involved in lots of stuff.
Nice. So you're talking to lots of companies, lots of business leaders. What are people thinking about? What are people worried about? What are people optimistic about? What's the view on the ground out there?
As always, there's a mix, right? There's some things that are roaring and some things that are struggling right now. And probably shouldn't call out people by name because...
I'm going to get in trouble here, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Like everybody in this last 18 months, we've seen our share of some companies that have had layoffs up there. And then we've also seen, you know, new exciting things come to town. Now, the exciting things are... There's probably no problem to throw out some names there. We're really excited that Vuori, which is just a thriving active apparel company, just moved their corporate headquarters to Carlsbad this year.
Is that a new facility they just opened up? Was that?
They took over a building on Avenida Encinas. They're an Encinitas company in their founding. They had one building in Carlsbad. They still had some stuff in Encinitas, and they brought it all under one roof in Carlsbad, and we're super excited to have them there. And then another exciting thing, BMW built a brand new facility ground up in our auto park, and they had two BMWs that they consolidated, one in Vista and one in Encinitas, and they consolidated them into this brand new facility in Carlsbad, and they are killing it. I mean, they are doing so much business there, and it's exciting. Great to have them there. So, I mean, yeah. So there's some positives that are roaring and then some other people who are fluctuating, but that's the nature of business, as you know. Even, you know, in our business park, we've seen some long-term scale, people scaling down post-COVID, where companies have embraced the virtual worker and realized this massive footprint we have isn't as necessary. And so we've seen, you know, Viasat is our biggest employer, and they've let go some of their buildings. You know, I think at peak, they were at 19 buildings were part of their campus. And they're down to like 13 buildings, and they might let go of a couple more. I mean,
that's a trend for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go downtown. You know, yeah. Find out what's going on
exactly.
Down there. Yeah.
For sure. So we've seen it too. For the most part, those buildings have been reabsorbed, but you know, we'll see as that continues. And as other companies hit triggers on long-term leases, what they do. So that kind of stuff happens and we're seeing it, but overall very solid. I think having a diversity of industries helps too. So if one industry, biotech, you know, Thermo Fisher is a big employer in Carlsbad, and they ramped up massively during COVID. As that waned and went down, they shrunk, you know, and that's
the norm.
It's reality. It's based on that unusual business need, and then it went away. So, I mean, it's not, you and I know it's not gone.
Talking about it. Yeah. Just had it recently.
Yeah. But, you know,
it's not like the old days, though. Now exactly. It's just, whack in the head for a few days.
So true. So yeah, we see all of that up there as well. But the diversity of industries there helps keep it so that it's not tanking the community in mass.
One of the things I want to talk about was something outside of the chamber is more what you're doing on the side. It was kind of funny. Your name got sent to me and said, oh, you should talk to Brett. And I'm not even sure why this was, but I went to this nonprofit and your mug showed up as like the new chairman of the board, I think it was. And I went, oh, this is interesting. Maybe share a little bit about what you're doing outside of the day to day.
Yeah. As I mentioned in my role at the chamber, we're very supportive of our nonprofit community. And, you know, I get some opportunities in that world. I'm currently chair of the board of the Solutions for Change. I've been on their board for about 8 years. Solutions for Change is based in North County, and they tackle family homelessness. So I say the word family very intentionally because that's not the single guy or the single woman maybe that you would see like pushing a shopping cart or something. That's not there. But they're families who find themselves in homelessness. That's their bread and butter. I love them. Their goal is to tackle the root causes that got somebody into that situation. And so, you know, frequently there's going to be issues of addiction and things like that that come into play. But there's a whole variety of causes when you get all the way down to the core of how somebody got themselves to a state of homelessness. And they put these families through basically like a university program almost. It's like a 2-year program that they put them through, and they're helping them with parenting classes, financial literacy, budgeting, workforce development, like how to get up get prepared, show up on time for jobs, you know, all these kinds of things that somewhere in there, for whatever reason, were missed in their life. And they train them up and get these people fully functioning, contributing members of society instead of being dependent on government stuff. They're back in the workforce and contributing, you know, and it's amazing to see. And one of my favorite, absolute favorite statistics for Solutions for Change is, as you can imagine, if a family finds themselves in a situation where they're homeless frequently, if not always, the children have been removed and taken by Child Protective Services and put into some kind of foster care. But for those families that find themselves in that situation, when they come to Solutions, we have a 100% success rate at reunification.
Oh, wow. That's phenomenal.
It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. And we've even heard testimonies where, you know, a family was coming into some kind of court situation. And in that hearing, the judge finds out that they've just got accepted into Solutions for Change. And there was a case where the judge said, oh, we're going to give you your kids back right now. You're on the path. We know they're great. You know, and so this is really cool. And I mean, when as we talk about it, Solutions, we're breaking generational cycles here and getting people out of this cycle or this churn, as we like to say, that ends up putting them into these situations that are difficult to get out of and breaking dependency. So it's exciting. And since we're talking, I'll throw this out. Just yesterday, we inked a deal. Solutions for Change is going to be purchasing Green Oaks Ranch in Vista, which is about 150-acre ranch nestled in there. And it's kind of been in the media because the county kind of popped up and said, we want to buy Green Oaks Ranch. And they had some ideas of homeless services. And then the city of Vista popped up and said, no, we're going to buy it to prevent the county. And all that. So
the usual circus. Right?
Exactly. At the moment, we have the contract. And so hopefully, you know, after our due diligence, it all works out. But at the moment, we're in an actual contract with them to purchase it. And if this works out, it'll be a game changer for Solutions.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Can you imagine from a family perspective?
Yeah.
And for the kids to be in that situation.
Do some fantastic ministry and the lives that they've touched. And like I said, the generational piece, so that these kids are now having an opportunity to get whole and get on a great path instead of being in these very challenging circumstances as youngsters.
Well, that's some great work. Thanks, Brett. Appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
One final question for you. Put a little bow on this thing. What's the big idea? Of all the things we shared here, what's the one thing you really want people to know and remember?
Putting my chamber hat back on, you know, we frequently have people who don't realize kind of the bigger picture value that individual chambers bring to communities. And, you know, we've been sharing about it, but I think that the bow that I would want to tie around this is just to encourage people to investigate that community advocacy part that chambers bring. In our world, we talk about three C's, the letter C, like C as in cat. And the one C is we are an economic catalyst. The second C is that we are a convener of leaders and all the people who are movers and shakers in the community. And the third C is a champion. We're a community champion. You know, investigate your local chamber, see how they're engaging in those three C's and how that's relevant to you. And I think if people took the time to do just a tiny bit of investigation in whatever community they're in, they'll find that their chamber is worthy of their investment and engagement.
Love it. Very enrolling. This whole conversation has been very enrolling. And I really can see how the whole idea of the community and what you're doing, not just trying to bolster up businesses, but the impact you're having on the community turns you on, and you're the right guy for the job, Brett.
Well, thank you.
So appreciate that.
I enjoy it.
Appreciate you coming in here today as well.
And thank you for giving me a platform to share.
That's my job. Trying to get people's stories out there. So that's our show for the day. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we're all counting on you.